Okay, well, thank you, everybody. When they called me and asked me to do this, I said, well, that's great. How long do I have? And they said 15 minutes. So we're here to do the best we can for you guys today. So a couple of housekeeping things I just wanted to make you aware of. You know, a lot of the stuff that we're talking about here, translating it into the media industry is really an important aspect of what we do. So I commissioned a case study on the weather company at IBM because they're, they have a very diverse set of business models and activities going on. And I think the complexity of that would be very interesting to this group. So when we're done, we have a very nice guy here named Rodney. You can talk to him if you'd like to be able to find that, source that later. The other thing is, I put together a media industry cyber range at IBM. So, you know, sorry if it sounds like an advertisement, but for those of you that like to understand, you know, more and more about this, the cybersecurity issues associated with the industry, we're going to start running those regularly. Probably July 30th is going to be the first one in the series afterwards. So, you know, please feel welcome to talk to Rodney again, and we'll figure out how to connect and make things happen for you guys.
Clicker's on the podium.
Oh,
I'm sorry, it's on the coffee table?
Maybe?
It's on the table.
Coffee table?
Yeah, didn't see it.
Sorry about that.
No, my fault.
Speak closer to the microphone, please.
Yeah.
Closer to the microphone.
Yeah, so here we go. We're going to talk a little bit about digital trust, and I think I'm not here to read a definition to you, but you know, the important thing to kind of understand here is it's really about confidence, right? And all the organizations in this room are really about creating digital trust through their implementation of cybersecurity. And what we've done, the theme in this is going to be, and I heard somebody kind of allude to it today, that there are, key areas to protect users, data, applications, transactions, and devices is really a lot about how we think about it and how we communicate it. Everything that I'm talking about today is in the context of the Weather Channel, and they've come a long way since we first started to become aware of them and work with them. And they're absolutely, as far as security goes, they're a world-class organization. So I hope that you find this interesting. So what we hear from the people like the folks in this room, whether it's this industry or it's another industry, there's a lot of commonality here. Some of the underlying technologies that we protect are a little different, right? But, at the end of the day, we're hearing from a lot of people that things are getting more and more challenging all the time. And the same is true with the Weather Channel because of the diversity of their business model. But it's about, how do I monetize, my security frameworks and controls in a world where, I've got a lot of tools, right? I've got a lot of domains that I've got to protect. I'm struggling with the tools that I have and, the policies and procedure pieces and all of this stuff. And I'm just struggling to keep up. What am I going to do in a world where I can't necessarily find people, right? The labor supply shortage is a really critical issue for a lot of people. But, one of the biggest overarching themes right now is this, how do I secure the journey to cloud and our digital transformation. Digital transformation, I think, based on what I've heard today, is a really big issue for everybody here. So, whether it's telcos, media, entertainment companies, global enterprises, a lot of you guys should feel comfortable that everybody's having the same sets of concerns and the challenges are very similar in a lot of ways. So what we're going to do is I want to kind of explain the conversations that took place. How did they get to the point where they became a world-class security organization as a media company, okay? So typically, it's about three separate conversations, okay? Security and strategy, risk confirmation, transformation. And, the conversation, needs to migrate from, necessarily security, but to risk management, right? The way we all got started in this space is that, we were putting up firewalls because we were being attacked and we had to protect our applications, protect our networks, and it evolved into, adding, anti-malware to the endpoints. And, we're all on this journey to try to figure out how to protect it. And then compliance drives us, right, where we're protecting. We all bought SIMs and put SIM technologies in our network. but we, a lot of us have evolved, as we've evolved and we've added security controls, right, the complexity of how we manage and use our tools is absolutely key. So we sit down, the first phase of this is really about having a security strategy around this transformation. Without a strategy, right, you know, you can't communicate it to your executives and your leadership, and that's really a, you know, kind of foundational work that you've got to do. And I heard about it a lot in pieces today, but again, you know, putting it all together in terms of the strategy to transform your business and create digital trust is really key. Having that conversation around the usability and the consumability of security controls, if you guys aren't there yet, you will be. Most companies out there, and I'll use BNY Mellon because they're not in this industry and their information is in the public domain. I was at a leading a CISO roundtable discussion in Israel about 2.5 years ago. And I said, you know, let's talk a little bit about security strategy. We went through, we did all that stuff. And I asked him, you know, to talk to the group. I said, I know from experience that you guys have over 100 security tools in your network. I understand the domains you're trying to protect in terms of financial services and vertically oriented platforms. I said, what are the biggest challenges that you guys are seeing in that, and as far as usability goes? And he said, well, he said, that's probably the best question somebody could ask me for this group because, you know, I have over 100 tools. I have 3 different types of intrusion detection systems. I'm running 3 types of anti-malware, and maybe I've replicated EDRs on the endpoint. And I said, all with the purpose of making sure that I have the right tool for detection, right? And I'm trying to fill gaps going forward. And what they found is that it's not working. And I said, and then I said, give us the best example of that. And you know, the truth of it was, from an economic perspective, you're looking at paying annual license fees on, you know, 3 different IDSs. You've got to have training of everybody on 3 different IDSs. You know, they all, you find that they all fire in different. They all fire and trigger on different types of events differently. And he said the worst part about it is, okay, that one of my tools might have mitigated it, but because another tool triggered on it, I'm chasing it. Okay, so they've mitigated a threat, but they're chasing it anyway someplace else, so you might have 2 people working on it taking a whole day. And the economic cost of that is, you know, it makes the cost of security a really big deal. And I said, well, okay, so, you know, the strategy then is, you know, we've got to sit down, right, and we have the strategy discussion about how we get there and we solve the usability and consumability issues associated with that. And, you know, how that creates gaps, because the other problem with that is if all of you guys are working with 3,200 security tools, you're also enhancing your big data problem that's making it easier for people to attack your network. And, you know, getting more from what you have, again, taking the augmenting the data, you know, automating processes, you know, the role of AI and security tool orchestration is really key. So, you know, building that security strategy is the first conversation that we have, right? And how well those tools align with threats, and then how you run your threat management program. Okay, so if you were to sit down and you were to talk to somebody at the weather company, you know, they would talk about how they've migrated their analytics-based threat detection, right, where they're looking at historical information around the log sources. Now, so if you're a security practitioner in this room, you know, you are probably witnessing and living every day with that big data problem, right? And is anybody here, I don't know how you feel about firewall logs. Do they think they're an important part of the analysis? Okay, so yeah, nobody, there are some, but you know, for the most part, you know, 50% of your log volume, if you're generating, a billion events a day, I would say about 400 million of them are firewall logs, and only about 70% of them are, 70% of those are relevant. You don't need to be tracking and having your analytics process, you know, one more failed log on attempt, right? So, you know, it's evolving that, right? So you're using relevant log sources, but you're enhancing the data. You're getting to the point where you're enhancing data, and you're adding flow data, right? So those of you that, let's say, are Elasticsearch users, right, and you're funneling your events into those types of things, you know, you got to be able to evolve and take advantage of those, you know, the information you can get by adding network analytics to what you're doing with your data, or adding user behavior analytics. I think user behavior analytics is one of the key things that I'm hearing today And when I talk to a media company that, you know, that they can understand, they can track, you know, the behaviors and have baselines on what people should be doing, understanding it relative to their roles, and using deep packet inspection in those environments so they can perform the right level of correlation analysis to feed that detection piece, right? But on the investigation side, you know, I think everybody here has got people that are doing manual Google searches, right? When they, you get a security event that's been triggered by one of your tools, you know, and it comes up, you know, we put it in, we take the information, we put it into Google, and we've got a process that's highly manual and takes a lot of time, and, you know, by the way, it's not very accurate based on experience. And, you know, it's one of the things that we're finding, you know, one of the real pickups for, you know, our friends over here at TWC was, you know, the role that log and data enrichment can have and the role of cognitive. So that, you know, we all have, you know, we have a threat cloud, for example, okay, where we have Watson reading and they utilize this, right? Where Watson's reading like 7 million pages a day of security logs. And, you know, wrecking up, you know, looking at VirusTotal and checking with, you know, Symantec and Microsoft and all the other threat centers. And we're coming up with stuff so that, you know, our, you know, the engine learns, right? And it knows how to research things. It can start establish trend patterns so that you can start to understand what the intent of an attack is. And the way to improve what you're doing, you can block, you know, there's a lot of things you can do to block threats. But at the end of the day, you know, the risk of people clicking on an email link that looks like an Amazon confirmation or a FedEx confirmation where you want to check the status of the package is going to happen. I think there's pretty much agreement in the security space that that's the case. And, you know, we want to be able to use that detection model that we talked about earlier, right, where we've got a strategy and how we manage it, that we can look into that and we can understand what's going on. And then one of the most important pieces of this was, you know, laying on top of these guys, you know, our policies and procedures for, you know, how they address and investigate attacks. So picture an attack campaign going on at your company, and you want to be able to know, you know, how they're based on how they did it, what the attack pattern and the kill chain is, right? Where it was detected, where your tools fired, so you understand the performance of each one of these tools and be able to visualize that in your analytics. And, you know, that was one of the more exciting things for me is to be able to say, okay, I'm reporting now up to the leadership and the governance model of my company, and I can say, okay, well, we had 3 significant attack campaigns this month. I was able to analyze all this stuff. I can tell you we were able to mitigate it here, but if you work backwards from mitigation, this is where they went. These are the assets that are compromised. You know, we understand how it happened, and oh, by the way, that historical data now becomes important, where we're saying retrospectively, we know that this started with a phishing campaign about 3 months ago. Really key, right? So, you know, again, how you run your threat management program is a very deep conversation, and it takes time to get this stuff mapped out. And then mitigation, right? I can share with you, I was sitting down with a CISO of a major company, and we were talking, and I said, well, talk to me a little bit about your response. And he said, well, you know, we've got our time to response down to 2 days. And I didn't know what to say to that. I said, well, okay, are you willing to share your time to detection statistic? No. Okay, and I said, can you guarantee that no one's owning your system right now? I think that, what did you call it, pwned earlier in one of the presentations? Can you guarantee you're not being pwned? And you know, then we had the honest and the real conversation that took place afterwards. So the answer was no, and it was typically some attack campaigns weren't recognized for about 3 months. So getting, you know, you can see how we're building through this process from left to right. I'm sorry, this is kind of an eye chart for you folks, but you know, it starts with strategy, it starts with goals around detection, investigation, and mitigation, automating the pieces that you can to accelerate, because time is everything, right? And then getting into digital trust. Somebody kind of alluded to this earlier today. And you know, the way we talk about it and the way the framework that's being utilized over at our friends is, you know, protection of 5 categories. And it's really about users, data, applications, transactions, and devices. And a transaction, you know, has maybe more than one meeting, right? It's not exactly just everything done on a credit card. It could be, you know, different types of transactions and how you apply controls to it. And it's not about the latest tool. Right? You know, we're all security practitioners, so we've always had a salesperson. You know, once a month, we get somebody calling us up saying, you know, we're all going to die if we don't buy this, right? And that's how we get to the point where we have a usability, consumability problem. But I think we can demonstrate very actively, and it's worked well to have a model that says, you know, it's about creating a protection model across those five areas, right? But it takes roughly, you know, 11 different risk management and security controls across those five categories. So, you know, it's not this, we've just seen this over and over again, where it's not about having hundreds of controls. You know, people are still being breached. We read about it in the paper every day. But it's how they all work together as one integrated security fabric and ecosystem. Because the problem associated with that, and I'll talk about that again in a few minutes, but it's really about that non-integrated silos of technology of a stack of security tools that you really have to get over. And then the roles of policies, variants, and you know, maybe being able to manage variances. So, you know, the conversation that we have, you know, we have a very rich history of policies and governance at IBM, and it was kind of, I guess the right word maybe is imposed. We imposed our will on the Weather Channel in terms of how they did all this stuff, but it was to their benefit. So that all of these things, right, whether it's security risk controls or, you know, processes, you know, policies and governments, you know, it all kind of conspires to really, you know, that's how you arrive at this you know, endpoint of digital trust. So we're going to talk about five categories and 11 different risk management controls. I want to give you a feel for it real quick. You guys can all take a picture of this, but, you know, your data, wherever it moves, wherever it rests, it's encrypted, okay? And, you know, we can, you know, expand that discussion around data and file activity monitoring and, you know, data discovery. I think as we move to the cloud, data discovery is a really big deal, okay? So fraud prevention, the role of AI, the last presenter kind of alluded to that. And then your devices and hosts, you know, where you guys are using, make sure you're using security enhanced Linux, right, so that you're inflicting policies, enforcing policies on your underlying IT infrastructure. But, you know, one of the great things about, you know, the weather company is that they have, if you look at it, their entire infrastructure from left to right, they've got a secure DevOps process where they secure that environment, they write applications, they test those applications, they deploy them in the cloud securely, and security policy happens automatically, where firewalls are configured, IDSs are configured, WAFs are configured, you know, the underlying, as I was talking about, the host IT infrastructure is configured for security, and they've been able to create, you know, a really, really fine environment. But let me just show you, I'll just skip ahead to the last for the last slide, because I think we're being pressed on time. But you can see, this is a complex set of things that needs to happen. It's about experience and expertise. And, you know, understanding the value of time. I don't hear people talk about that enough. Time represents cost, it represents risk. And, you know, that's one of the things that we really focused on, is, you know, ultimately resulting in security controls working as that one integrated system. And just to kind of wrap it up with this slide, you know, kind of where are you on your journey, right? If you think about it, I can very comfortably tell you that I have probed, it's not about having tools and even policies, I probed these guys, you know, underneath the surface in detail, and under cross-examination, they've done a great job. I can tell you of companies that think they're on number four, but then when you get underneath it, right, they're not running all the rules in their intrusion detection system. Or, you know, they're not managing, you know, their SIM in a way that they need to. So it's quite interesting. I had a job offer from a company, a Fortune 50 company, to come and build a security operations center, and that, you know, after we got into it, I was just like, no, this is probably not the right place for me, and I don't understand that the Fortune 50 company that doesn't have a security operations center isn't willing to invest and improve it. But, in you know, just to wrap this up based on our time constraints, you know, if you're in a number five like these guys, right? You know, you've automated processes. You've got a great set of infrastructure. You're able to do things. You've automated a lot of stuff. You're collapsing time frames. And, you know, like automated threat hunting, right? Where you built an application and, you know, you can, when you get a tool that's firing, you know, you can then query that host and get a set of, you know, indicators of compromise and start proactively hunting on other hosts, you know, that have basically triggered you. So if you take that and extrapolate that out to the things that you can do to automate mitigation, you can automate threat hunting, you can automate response, You know, that's where you kind of find yourself, and that's how you kind of all funnel down into this idea that you've got digital trust, right? You have a strategy, you understand your risks, you're managing your trust, and your governance and leadership is involved. So, I'm sorry I had to whiz through that for you guys.
All right. Excellent. Thank you so much, Michael. That was awesome. Appreciate that. The other thing it also calls to the forefront of usage case.